This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour three as we roll along this morning. Glad to be with us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. It's also a throwback Thursday this morning, 1995. The Arizona Diamondbacks and the Tampa Bay Rays were announced that they would be the new expansion teams in Major League Baseball. They would start play in 1998. We haven't had an expansion in Major League Baseball since, although people certainly like to believe that it's right around the corner. Matt Moreno is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. The Pac-12 tournament is going on at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. He's with GoAZCats.com. Covers Arizona, but we'll talk to him about the Pac-12 as we continue to look at the conferences. Do we get them all in now? Are we all good?
Yeah.
I was going to say we did, right? We got three. We're getting three today.
I mean,
we did the SEC.
You know, with the exception of like the American Athletic Conference or
right.
the Mid-Atlantic Athletic Conference.
We did the Big East, the ACC, the SEC. We did the Big 12, the Big 10. We got the Pac-12. Those are the Power Six.
Yep.
We did the WCC.
Because of Gonzaga and St. Mary's, they're always at the top of the table.
Seven this week.
Yeah.
We've brought out seven
Who
this
knew?
Week. Who knew? We've got you covered.
What am I going to do?
Tomorrow
we got Ivy League on tap, right?
That's right.
No, we're not doing Ivy
Columbia
League.
Columbia and Yale and Princeton and I don't
Colgate.
Even know who's good in the Ivy League. I don't even know.
I don't know.
It used to be Princeton.
Yeah, Princeton Tigers.
Princeton still good?
Let's just assume, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, one other sporting event that's going on right now, the Players Championship at the TPC Sawgrass is going on right now. It's golf's fifth major. It's kind of like it's unofficial title because nobody ever admits that there's five majors, but people like this tournament. You get a five-year exemption on the PGA Tour if you win it, and you get lots and lots and lots of money. But Hayden Buckley this morning has already made a hole-in-one on the 17th hole. If you're going to make a hole-in-one, isn't that the hole you want to make the hole-in-one on, or would you rather do it at Phoenix?
Oh, I think I'd rather do it.
I think I'd rather do it at Phoenix. But I don't know. This is like
know.
The iconic par
yeah.
three in
I
the
mean,
world.
I was ready to say Phoenix all up until I remembered where the tournament is held.
Yeah.
Because it's not really an island, but it's kind of an island.
So.
Right?
Right. It's got a little strip of land that you walk on, yeah.
Little narrows.
So, Island Green, the 12th at Augusta National, Waste Management Open, 16th hole, 7th at Pebble Beach. I'm trying to think of other iconic par threes that are on tour that are just in our lives every single year. I got to think those are the four, but there's probably more. If somebody wants to give me on Twitter, you can do so. I probably will agree with you.
Sure, there's one at St. Andrews, right?
I can't think of an iconic par three at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
They've got like a great par five, the 14th. Troon. I think it's the 7th at Troon with the big bunkers. If you're going to make a hole in one, the Island Green at TPC Sawgrass, it's got to be one you would put on your you'd get all the souvenirs. You would ask the tournament, I need that flag. Put another flag. I need that one. I'm going to put it in my trophy room. But but you can't. No matter how great the crowd is, it's not the amphitheater of the Waste Management Open. It's Scottsdale. Right? And the 7th hole at Pebble Beach, no one's around. There's no crowd there. If you know the 7th at Pebble Beach, it's on the shore. It's a really short par three that's right on the cliffs. There's no crowd. So you don't get the feeling of the roars of people if you make a hole in one there. But Hayden Bunkley dunked one in on the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass this morning, so I tell you, that's a fun course, man. You know what I like about the TPC Sawgrass? I feel like every Tiger Woods video game I've ever bought in my life has that course on it. Like every single video game I've bought
ever,
they always throw in a little TPC. Like I remember getting a Sega Genesis in the 90s, and I bought PGA Tour Golf, and it had a number of courses, and one of them was TPC Sawgrass. So if you're a golf video game person, you get this course almost in every edition of every game that you've ever bought. So I like when people say they know the course, they pretty much know it because they've probably played golf video games.
See, I was just looking up a list of, you know, the best holes to have one.
Yeah.
And one is the extreme 19th hole.
Which is where?
In Entebbe, South Africa.
Oh, okay. Is that the one where you take a helicopter to a cliff?
You got to take a helicopter up to the cliff. And it's, you know, it's 395 yards horizontally, but it's 400 meters down.
So what is the – so on that hole, what is the caddy grade for what you have to hit slope and elevation? Right?
I don't know.
So – they have these, you know, when you play golf, they have those range finders now, those laser things.
I don't think it would work
right
on this one.
Yeah, you can get them with slope.
Have you ever hit a ball off like a higher elevation that's going down to?
Not that steep.
Not
Colorado.
That steep.
Colorado had some courses like that, but not that bad. You know, it's like
there
was
one in San Diego I used to play at. And when you teed off, it was always the craziest thing. And we would take like three or four balls to do it. We hit because it's like, you know, it takes a while to kind of get up to it. And I don't remember really how tall it was, but the only thing I remember is that you think that if you go full speed, you're gonna miss the green by a mile.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sure. Probably the optical illusion.
It is such a weird thing. So I mean, but we would swing full power, and there were times I didn't even make it. Because it's like it's going out, then all of a sudden the ball just drops straight down.
Yeah. That's kind of nuts.
It's a weird, weird look.
Yeah, I don't know what the Pythagorean theorem math is to figure out what the actual yardage is via slope. So when you get those range finders, they have those with slope a little just for you. So if you're 170 to the flag, but you're uphill, it'll give you like it'll do the calculation for you. Those are illegal. Like in tournament play, like in tournaments where they allow you to use the range finder, you can't use the slope.
Will this range finder find out the slope or, you know, how you got to do it for 400 meters straight down?
Right. Exactly. Would it do that? Like
if
you were to
400
beam
meters?
It.
I hate math.
Yeah, I don't want to do it. So when I bought my range finder, I went without the slope. And my buddy said, why didn't you get the one with slope? And I go, it's illegal in tournament play. He goes, how many tournaments have you played? I go, zero. He goes, exactly. Right. I go, yeah, right. Why didn't I buy this? Why was I that stupid? Why didn't I buy? Dummy. Why didn't I buy the slope? I can't believe I didn't buy it. So they're great because it helps. Like I just want to know. I'm not always going to hit it that distance. You know, I'm not that good. But at least I know it should be a 5-iron.
Yeah.
Rather than bringing, you know, 10 clubs and deciding. I just go, oh, it's 162. That's about what I hit this club.
Just in case you were wondering, 400 meters is 1,300 feet.
1,300 feet.
A little over 1,300 feet.
Okay, so that's like, what is that? Like a quarter of a mile?
Maybe a quarter of a mile, yeah.
Yeah. Good Lord.
It's up there. That's impressive.
That's impressive, man. That's awesome.
It kind of makes sense why you need to get a helicopter to get up there.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. Is TPC Sawgrass listed?
TPC Sawgrass is on there, yeah.
Yeah.
That was number one on the list.
If I could play one par three without the crowd, of course, because TPC, Scottsdale, I'd love to try to play in front of that crowd.
You had mentioned Royal Troon.
I would play
Port Royal, Bermuda.
Okay, yep.
Augusta. 12.
Augusta. That's the one I want. That's the one I would play. If you could say, I'll get you to any par three that you want in the world, regardless of country club status, 12th at Augusta is the one I want to play. TPC Sawgrass is a very, very close second.
Yeah. But I think if you were guaranteed to hit a hole in one as well, right?
Yeah, if you could get a hole-in-one, which one would you want?
I think TPC Scottsdale would creep up there just because – you would
if you get the crowd. If you could get the crowd.
If you get the crowd. Yeah.
If you went on a Saturday and where there's no crowd.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a tournament. You're in the stadium.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's people who have been drinking beer all day long.
That would be thrilling. The Masters would be the most important because you did it in a major. The TPC Sawgrass, more iconic because of the hole. Because here's the thing. If you went to... I think this hole is so famous that casual golf fans know it. And if you went to people and you said, I made a hole-in-one at the 17th at TPC Sawgrass, most people go, oh, my gosh. 12th at Augusta would get people going, oh, yeah, that's the – let me think about – is that – yeah, okay, that's the one over the river. But the Island Green is the one people know. It's so iconic. So it would be more fun at Phoenix. It would be more important at Augusta and more iconic at TPC Sawgrass. That's the way I'm ranking them.
All right, what about the 17th at Kiawah Island?
17th at Kiawah Island.
I'm looking at a different list now that I had listed.
I don't know what that one is. That's a pretty good one. I'm trying to remember Mickelson won at Kiawah Island. I'm trying to remember that last hole, that second to last hole.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
I don't remember that. It's not in my head. So I know Cypress Point or Spyglass. Yes, I think Cypress Point is 16.
Is on there.
With a tree, and it's over a cliff. It's over the watery, rocky cliff that you have to hit over. So,
yeah. Cypress Point, 15th and 16th.
They have two par threes on that?
Yeah, consecutive par threes.
Wow, you don't get that very much. Not that every day.
The 16th at Carnoustie. I'm looking at golf.
16th at Carnoustie. Yeah, I know that hole. I know Carnoustie pretty well. One of Ben Hogan's toughest. He said it was the toughest golf course he ever played was Carnoustie. But yeah, all right. Well, congratulations to Hayden Buckley. I've never heard of him before, and he has got a hole in one on the 17th. A memorable moment for this fine young man on the PGA Tour. Probably something he'll never forget. Oh, he's from Chattanooga too. He's 27 years old, and he went to Missouri. So I should know who he is, but I don't. So congratulations, Hayden Buckley from Chattanooga. All right, we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, so we've done the conference tournaments. We've talked about Jim Boeheim. Well, let's talk some NBA, because last night, that must have just been absolutely heartbreaking for all of the fans in Phoenix showed up to watch the Suns play the Oklahoma City Thunder. And we're so excited watching Kevin Durant warm up.
And maybe one of the court wiper downers.
Yeah.
You might be looking for a job. Uh-huh. I don't know what you call those people, but.
You might be. And should NFL, NBA refs speak to the media?
I'd been forgotten, Joe. I've been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? I'd been forgotten, Joe. I've been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe?
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right. Cotton Eye Joe, 1995, Throwback Thursday. Tampa Bay Rays and the Arizona Diamondbacks were going to be the new Major League Baseball expansion teams. They came after the Miami Marlins and the Florida Marlins, I should say, because they were Florida Marlins back then. And the Colorado Rockies entered the league in the early 90s. And then a few years later, these two teams were added. Arizona Diamondbacks, both teams relatively had some success in the past. The Diamondbacks are kind of crappy, but the Rays lately have been pretty good. They've been making the playoffs and being one of the teams in the AL East you got to watch out for. They've managed their payroll really well. Nevertheless, Major League Baseball is still in conversations about possible expansion down the road. I don't blame them if you can do it. You don't want to dilute your product, but at the same time, the more you want to expand. You do want to expand.
I mean, I look at the MLS, and the MLS is, I mean, they've been expanding like mad over the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think it's diluting it at all, though.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I know for them. I mean, you know what? I mean, with baseball, it's kind of a similar situation because MLS is able to expand because they're able to grab a lot of international players.
Sure.
Baseball is starting to do that anyways.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, look, you're asking each one of these, if you expand to two more teams, you're putting about 50 players back in the system and a number of other players into the minor leagues to grow the system. And I think you can look around the globe and find 50 legitimate baseball players.
Because the NFL, that's one thing the NFL is always going to suffer from.
Right, is that it's lack of quality players at key position.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be able to, tap into the talent pool of Germany or, Belgium for a quality football player.
Right.
Maybe kickers.
It's very North American based.
Maybe
kickers. Yeah, can you imagine if England had a quarterback?
Right.
Like, imagine if England, imagine if the country of England had this, like, an Arch Manning-like youngster. And everyone's like, wow, this kid from Berkshire slings it like you wouldn't believe.
Got a cannon.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, he's
an then American scout. Then he runs a 4-4-40.
American scouts going over there to see him throw, and he's like, can't play because there's no football, so his parents had to move to Ohio. What a story. Wow, what a story.
But, I mean, you can do it in all the other sports. Basketball, you're able to go and tap in the talent pools of other countries. They've been doing it for years now, and, baseball's doing it. Soccer does it. And that's why, like, you know, baseball, you can still expand. There's plenty of talent out there.
To me, the odds of an individual, a young man, making the NBA is literally impossible, given the global nature of the sport.
Now, yeah.
And the limited roster's size.
12 players.
That's it.
Maybe 15.
Maybe 15.
Maybe 15.
On 30 NBA teams.
If you're on the Lakers, you're going to have maybe 17 because...
450 people. That's it, around the globe, that get to be an NBA player.
Yeah.
That's it. It's unbelievably impossible. And in the globalness of the game hurts because, you know, yeah, it's really hard if you're just pulling in the United States. But it's even more difficult when you're pulling from the international field. Because there's always going to be people like, you know, the Dirk Nowitzki is coming in or Nikola Jokic is coming in, right? I mean, there's always going to be somebody internationally. But, yeah, it's so I think Major League Baseball would be in good hands. This World Baseball Classic, the thing I'm not paying attention to, is apparently blowing up.
Yeah. The only thing I saw.
I haven't seen anything but Twitter. So correct me if I'm wrong, but everybody on Twitter who's watching this is loving this. And they're all over the place. These games are all around the world.
The one thing that I did see, the only highlight video that I've really seen was Shohei Ohtani hitting a home run on one knee.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did see that.
And
yeah.
I'm sitting there, all I'm thinking to myself is like, he will break the dollar amount.
What was the collision between the two players in the World Baseball Classic?
Oh,
they were
know.
Two baseball players in the outfield. I saw that. Somebody, again, all I'm watching is Twitter, so please forgive me. I'm not paying attention to the WBC, but I should be. Some people are, and they're loving it. They're loving it. But, yeah, Shohei Ohtani, he's going to get $1 trillion.
He's right? He might be the first billionaire. Billion-dollar contract. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You're paying for two players.
Yep.
So you can go ahead and fork over that cash. You can go ahead and say, he's going to get a $500 million contract. 10 years, $500 million.
Yeah.
Because you're paying for two players.
The big news out of the NBA last night was Kevin Durant set to make his home debut. He's went 3-0 in three games since joining the Phoenix Suns. Everybody was excited
Look
about
good
it.
In
Everybody
warm-ups.
Should have been excited about it. He's out there. People are flooding into the arena, getting their pictures with Kevin Durant in a Phoenix Suns uniform. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. This is amazing. We're going to win the championship. Look at him. Oh, shoot, he just slipped. Pre-game
no
warm-ups.
No big deal, right? You just slipped. It's okay,
just
right?
Just slipped. Sprained his left ankle. They're going to have an MRI today to determine the severity of the injury. The team won anyway. They blew out Oklahoma City. But fans came to see Durant. And they said they found him lying on the ground, on the floor, just slipping. You got to keep those floors dry, kids. Make sure you wipe that down. By the way, man, look, when you slip... And you have that, when you know you've slipped, that moment where you've slipped and you know you're going to fall, it's like, you know how Hollywood portrays it like in slow motion, like, whoa, right? They always do that in commercials for like a cleaning product where the guy has a glass of wine and he slipped and the wine is about ready to spill all over the white couch. Whoa. That's what I felt like watching the video of that. Durant's going up to the basket. Oops. He plants his foot, slips. Uh-oh. And then, whoa, big man tumbling.
Yeah, you knew it was coming.
You knew it was coming.
Because the video you're looking at says, like, oh, he went down.
You almost could see it. Just could see it, like, oh, no.
And here's my question, right? Given his size,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's never really been an issue before, but he's so tall, he's very skinny. Is his age now because of the wear and tear that's on his body? Is he going to be more susceptible? Because he seems to be injured all the time now.
He just had an MCL injury in his knee that he was coming back from early January. So
and they're already saying this, you know, he's done for the regular season. He's out.
Yeah.
They're not even going to bother with it, but he could miss the rest of the season.
I mean, we've already played this Kevin Durant injury game before, didn't we, a couple of years ago? Didn't we do this when we was with Golden State?
Yeah.
It was one of our fun things we did during the NBA playoffs was we played the game, is Durant going to play or not? Because the Golden State Warriors were like, well, yeah, he's practicing. He's warming up. Yeah, he might suit up tonight. And then we'd wait. Oh, no, we didn't. And they go, well, Thursday, game three. He'll be at, nope. Well, game five, he should be, nope. Game seven, nope. Like he would be out these series until he finally came back in the finals. So... Ugh. Then he got hurt in the finals.
Yep.
But you're right. He just injury after injury after injury. And it's got to stink. Like, if you're the Nuggets, this is like a nice breath of relief. Because the Suns were coming, man. The Suns were coming. They were playing so good, and it felt like it was coming together with Durant that maybe not make a push. The Nuggets are too comfortable of a lead, but what's
dangerous in the playoffs?
What's the number one seed in the Western Conference if the other team's got Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and Chris Paul?
Right.
What does it matter if you're the number one seed? You could have Nikola Jokic all you want, but they got Durant. And now we'll see where Durant goes from here.
And Kyrie's going to blow it up anyway, right? So don't worry about it.
Yeah, right, exactly, right. Now we'll see where the Phoenix Suns go in terms of what they do with Durant going forward.
Now, I will say this though, right? I mean, Durant getting injured looked a lot better than Anthony Davis the other day.
Yeah.
Now, I think Anthony Davis played, but he took a simple bounce pass off one of his fingers. And it just made me laugh. Because it wasn't a hard bounce pass. It was just like, you know, it was during warm-ups. So it was one of those bounce passes that, you know, it's like, hey, you catch the ball, you drive to the layup, you know, to put in a layup. That's all the bounce pass was. So you know, you have it in your mind that it's not a hard pass. And this guy, I mean, he popped his finger. And he's walking back just like shaking his hand after he takes a shot. It's like, and I'm sitting there, all I can think about looking at is like, oh, he's out for 3 more weeks.
Give me a break. I know, right? It's just
I've never seen Mr. Glass in real person.
Yes! Mr. Glass! That's a great, great way to put that.
That's Anthony Davis.
That's Anthony Davis. Oh, bounce. Ouch. Oh, 3 weeks. Bye.
Yeah. He did play. I think all he did was tape it up, so I think he's okay. But it was just one of those moments you're looking at it like, okay, here we go again.
The question that's got to happen with Phoenix is, the end of the regular season is April 9th. We are about a month away, right? So if this is a 4 week injury, 4 to 6 week injury, like people are projecting, we'll know about it later with the MRI, but he's done for the regular season. Are the 3 games enough for Phoenix to be confident that it's gelling enough in a playoff series when we get to the playoffs? Maybe in round one, is there going to be enough games that when you get to the tougher competition?
Not only that, but I mean, they are a 4th seed, so they're playing, they'd be playing the 5th seed, right?
Yeah, well, they'll be playing seed 5, right?
So, I mean, it's not going to be a slack team.
Right, so that's my concern, is like, did it gel enough to get this guy off of the injury? Has he had enough games to gel enough in a quick 7-game series? They could be out if they don't gel together and figure it out. We might remember this slip all playoffs long.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Throwback Thursday, 1995, the Tampa Bay Rays and the Arizona Diamondbacks, that was announced that they would be expansion teams. They would come into the league 2 years later. Busy day on a Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, looking for a career path with flexibility and great pay and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. We've been doing a lot of conference tournaments. The one that's going out in Las Vegas, well, there's two going out in Las Vegas, Mountain West and the Pac-12. We're going to focus on the Pac-12. Matt Moreno joins us. Go AZCats.com. Covers Arizona, but also the Pac-12. How are you, Matt?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right, look, a lot of people have 4 teams in this in the tournament on Selection Sunday from the Pac-12. Does it go any deeper than that?
I don't think so. I think when you look at the overall kind of view of the league, it's felt like kind of a down year. You had obviously the two teams at the very top with UCLA and Arizona, and then you kind of had, you know, some of those other teams in the mix, Oregon, USC. But ASU could potentially, Arizona State could potentially move in there. Obviously had, you know, that big win against Arizona on Arizona's own home floor last second, past half-court heave, desperation heave that went in and, you know, handed Arizona a loss. And so I could see, you know, ASU, if they are able to get, you know, past USC here today and then, you know, potentially be Arizona again, maybe they're a team that is able to get in as well. So maybe that's the one team to watch, but it feels like it's kind of that top group is going to, you know, be the one that separates itself.
Yeah, so that leads me to my next question, which is a question we've been asking all morning to these conferences, is in the middle of this conference, where is the desperation? Is anybody on a bubble? Does anybody need to win some games to join the party?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you look at Oregon, it seems like Oregon's maybe right on the cusp of that and probably needs to win the conference tournament to really solidify its spot and feel comfortable about where it's at, you know, going into Selection Sunday. You know, they don't have an easy pass, but, you know, with UCLA losing, you know, its top defender, maybe one of the top defenders in the country, Jalen Clark,
yeah,
maybe opens that up a little bit for Oregon to make a little bit of a run, and we'll see what UCLA looks like. Obviously, Colorado is kind of an interesting team playing without KJ Simpson, who's out with an illness this week, so they were able to, you know, pull out a win in the opening round, and you know, maybe a little bit surprising there. So we'll see what they're able to do against UCLA and what UCLA looks like without Jalen Clark. But maybe that opens the door for Oregon to make a push, you know, through the semifinals into that championship game.
What is your early perception of that situation with UCLA without Jalen Clark? How do they fill that gap? What might they look like now without him?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how they kind of attack that. They were already kind of a smaller team as it was, and you know, they kind of worked around that, but you're going to have to probably have some different guys step up. They're going to have to lean on their bench a little bit more, obviously. But I think for this week, I don't think it necessarily changes much for them this week, because if you look at what we all anticipate, which is that they're going to play Arizona again in the championship game, you know, Arizona doesn't necessarily – they're not guard heavy. They're not reliant so much on their guards. They're more about their bigs, and they play through their bigs. And so I don't think that, you know, necessarily losing your best perimeter defender is going to necessarily impact them a whole bunch this week. As you go into that championship game, potentially against Arizona. But for the NCAA tournament, it's going to make things very, very difficult. Obviously, the tournament committee is going to be looking at that, and Mick Cronin talked about it this week and said we're going to be open with the NCAA tournament committee, whether, you know, because they want to push for that number one seed. And they're probably in a position right now where they need to win the conference tournament just to solidify themselves as that top seed and prove that they can win without Jalen Clark. But it's going to be a really interesting week for UCLA to see how they adapt without Jalen Clark. But I think where it's really going to impact them is in the NCAA tournament, when you need to play defense and you need to, you know, guard in the perimeter. And he brings a lot on that end of the floor. He's kind of the catalyst for their elite defense. And then he's been improving offensively as well. And so that's a big loss for UCLA and really kind of dampens their chances of making a Final Four and potentially winning a championship.
Matt Marino joins us talking Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas. GoAZCats.com. Let's talk about Arizona. Where are they strong and where are they vulnerable?
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned, I think the front court is where their strength is. Umar Ballo, their center, has been really strong throughout the season. Just won the Pac-12 Most Improved Player of the Year. You know, he sat behind Christian Colobo, who won the award last year and eventually got drafted and went on to the NBA. But Umar Ballo has been really, an integral piece of what Arizona wants to do. And as kind of towards the end of the season, maybe had a little bit of a dip. And Azulis Tubelis, their star power forward, who was challenging for player of the year honors, leads the Pac-12 in both scoring and rebounding. He had a little bit of a dip as well, kind of toward the end of the regular season. And it was really interesting because that's what happened last year. You know, when they got into the NCAA tournament, Azulis Tubelis really kind of disappeared. And so fans were thinking, well, maybe is this kind of a pattern and this is going to be what happens and you're losing him at the, you know, most important time of the year. But he bounced back nicely in LA, had two really strong games, and really seems to be back on the right foot and on the right note for Arizona, and everything's going to go through those bigs. I mean, their perimeter play is not an elite level. Their guards are certainly good, but they're not elite level guards. And so they're going to lean on, you know, that front court and those big guys and try and get them the ball and try and get them, you know, more in focus. And that's what Tommy Lloyd, after the UCLA game, he mentioned, you know, that that Arizona need to do a better job even getting the ball to the bigs even more. And so they want to play through those guys. But Kylan Boswell, a freshman point guard, has really stepped up late in the season, kind of came in thinking that he was going to be mostly a defensive guy and someone who focused more on that end of the floor. But his shooting really took off in L.A. In the last week of the regular season. And if he can continue that, that could be a really big X factor for Arizona as they push through not only this tournament, but the NCAA tournament as well.
You know, I love talking to you about this because I live in Nashville, so I live in SEC country, and Pac-12 games are just they're really late. So I do a lot of box score analysis the next morning, but I do get to catch some of these teams on the weekend. Here's a team I was ignoring, and then after a while, I'm like, oh my God, they got a UCLA win. They're starting to play well. They won four straight, and that's USC. Is this a dangerous basketball team?
I think so. I think they have a lot of talent. You know, you look at their roster and you go, man, they have some players that can do some things. And obviously they're rewarded with some, you know, all Pac-12 honors as well. And so they're a team you kind of forget about, I think, just because,
yeah,
you know, UCLA is so dominant in LA, and obviously Arizona is kind of one of those other teams that everyone talks about. And USC kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But yeah, before You know, last week when Arizona went in there and beat them, they had that four-game winning streak and were playing really well. I mean, Boogie Ellis is such a star player.
No doubt.
Even against Arizona in that game, I think he had 35 points, and really they had no answer for him. And so that is definitely something that to watch out for, because USC is very talented across the board. Drew Peterson is another very talented player. Was a little bit dinged up in that Arizona game last week. But you lean on those two players, and you can really do some damage. And they're another team that I think, and they've shown it before, you know, they can go deep in the tournament when you're not really expecting it. And so they're definitely a dangerous team, and I think they have a lot of talent, but it's led by Drew Peterson and especially Boogie Ellis, who's playing really, really well at the right time of year.
Matt, we talk about you're talking about two teams in UCLA and Arizona that are going to be one of the top teams when we get to Selection Sunday. But you talked about maybe a down year in the conference. Is there such a huge gap between those two teams and with the middle of the conference producing? Not so much the bottom end, but I mean like the Utahs and the Colorados and the Arizona States. Is the talent gap just so big between those two?
I don't think it is. I think it's just they kind of have the right mix of players and have, you know, the star power and kind of have the veterans and kind of what every team is looking for, where you can drop in a talented freshman like Kylan Boswell to a team that's experienced and has some juniors and seniors. And so I think that's kind of where their strength lies. But you look at even, you know, Arizona and UCLA as well, they've had some losses, but especially Arizona has had some losses against teams that you just wouldn't expect. Utah beating Arizona. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, night in and night out, the talent is not that big. The talent disparity is not that big where, you know, a team, if you're not playing your best, the team is going to get you. And so I would agree with that. I don't think it's a huge disparity there. And that's what makes, you know, this time of year so fun and exciting to watch, because you're playing one game and on any night, you know, a team can get you. And so I think there hasn't been very many upsets so far. I think there's going to potentially be maybe some upsets here if things hold true.
Yeah, I've been saying this all week. I think one of the reasons that I like these conference tournaments so much is that, you know, when you get to the NCAA tournament, it's neat to see two schools that may have never met in the history of their programs. But when you get to this time of year where you might be desperate, the familiarity, I think, is the key, is the idea that you might be playing a team for the third time, definitely a second time in these things, and you know them. And not only do you know them, you know what's been going on in your conference night in and night out.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, certain teams have certain things to play for. And when you get into that desperation mode, that's when things can really get interesting, because you have a team like Arizona who probably is locked into whatever seed it's going to get. I mean, you could talk about if they end up winning the championship, beat UCLA again, maybe they're in play for number one seed. But, you know, it feels like they're pretty locked into a two seed. So are they maybe a little bit more reserved in what they're doing? Obviously, they want to win the championship, but if they feel like they're locked in, maybe a team is able to sneak in there and get them. And obviously they're going up against a couple teams here soon that could challenge them potentially. And so, when you look across the board, there's always that opportunity. I think once you get into that desperation mode and you're finding teams that are, hey, you need to win every day to get to the NCAA tournament, I think that's where you get that X factor of, hey, this is anything can happen.
Matt, great stuff. Appreciate it. Enjoy the Pac-12 Conference Tournament and the NCAA Tournament as well with Arizona. Appreciate your time, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Matt Moreno, GoAZCats.com is the website. Again, Pac-12 Tournament, four teams on top of that one. UCLA, Arizona, USC, and Oregon. Yeah, there could be an Arizona State that fights its way in. It's not as deep as other conferences, but with Jalen Clark out at UCLA, that's a big story, and Arizona has always got a threatening team.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks to Matt Moreno, Pac-12. All right, so not as deep as the Big 12, but they've got two teams that can win, that can be right there winning a national championship in Arizona and USC. Oh, UCLA. I like USC, though. I've been kind of like, when I do my, like, I look at the conferences and whatnot, and then I noticed UCLA was really good and whatnot, but then USC was playing really well and beat them one time. So we'll see. There'll be four teams, maybe five coming into it. But he said it was a, you know, kind of a down year for the conference. Colorado was mediocre. Washington was mediocre. Stanford, Oregon State, and California, they were terrible. So, excuse me. Nevertheless, we'll get to the weekend. Oscars coming up this weekend as well. Brian Truitt is going to join us. USA Today, right?
Yes.
tomorrow.
Film critic extraordinaire.
Film critic extraordinaire to help us go through the Oscars, if that's up your alley.
I just want to know, is Data from Goonies, how good of a chance does he have to win this thing? I know he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I want to see him win the Oscar.
Is Top Gun Maverick up for the top picture?
Of course it is.
I hope so.
Does
that
have a chance of winning? No.
No, it's not going to win. What message does it send? What political cause does it promote?
Right.
That's it. That's it. The military-industrial complex? I'm not going to give it to that.
That a rogue aging pilot can just do things on his own and succeed?
No, we're not going down that road.
Our military flight pilots would be in disarray if it wins.
You know, I feel like a broken record because everybody is saying this. Everybody says this. But the Oscars just don't have the same pop that they used to. It's so sad.
They don't.
It used to be one of the biggest nights in entertainment of the year.
Because it's gotten too artsy.
Yeah, it has.
I mean, I look forward. I mean, it's funny because when I was younger, I used to look forward to the Emmys and I look forward to the Oscars because I knew a lot of the programming. Then when we had streaming services happen, I almost look more forward to the Emmys now. There was a period where it kind of went away.
Yeah.
But now that we have all these streaming services and we have all these people doing TV shows that aren't stereotypical TV shows, I look forward to that now.
Did you ever venture down to the Oscars for the red carpet arrival of the celebrities when you were younger?
No.
Nah, me. I don't think that would have been a thing I would have done either.
Nah,
I'm not a screaming young girl.
That area already is horrible.
Yeah, right.
For traffic and, parking and stuff like that. It's like, you'd park miles away just to walk and, hopefully catch a glimpse of someone walking through if you were lucky enough to get it towards the front. Nah, it's not worth it.
The Oscars. Remember when Billy Crystal used to host them?
All the time.
He would do those songs.
Yeah, now it's,
those songs.
Now it'll be Jimmy Kimmel again.
Yeah, now Jimmy Kimmel again. Not Chris Rock anymore. His special over the weekend. It was really good.
Reports every day that Jada Pinkett Smith is hurt by it. Will Smith is wondering why he just can't let it go.
And I think that was the purpose, right?
Well,
it's got to be awesome if you're Chris Rock and you hear reports that Jada Pinkett Smith was upset at your stand-up. You must have been like, that's exactly what I was aiming for.
Yeah.
If you were disinterested or didn't care, well, I would have taken that because I would have expected that. But if I know it hit a nerve, that was why I did it in the first place.
And I think the other reasoning why you have it in there, as public, Chris Rock knew that he has to address it.
Absolutely.
That his fans would demand it. Like, we don't care about any of your other jokes. I want to know how do you feel about Will Smith at this point?
And I think if you're a comedian, that's one of the problems that you have, because when you're an actor, right, you are playing a role, right? You're a character. You are not that person, right? You're Harrison Ford. You're not Indiana Jones. You're Harrison Ford playing Indiana Jones. When something happens, you don't have a forum where you're going to talk about a bunch of things. And then you can refuse to do that. So if you're Harrison Ford and that happened to you at the Oscars, well, why am I using Harrison Ford when I should be using like Jonah Hill, right? So if you're a young actor and that happened to you on an Oscar stage, when you go on the TV shows to promote a movie or you're doing the press tour to promote a movie, you can go, I'm here to talk about the movie. I really don't want to get into why somebody came out and slapped me. But if you're a comedian and you're doing a comedic set and you're going to talk about Meghan Markle and you're going to talk about this and you're going to talk about this issue and you're talking about this president and you're going to talk about this political candidate, are you going to talk about this situation or that situation, and you don't address it, then you're not – you have – you're the expectation is that you would. The expectation is, oh, you'll talk about all these things, but you won't talk about you getting slapped in the face. You almost have to talk about getting slapped in
the
face.
You have to.
If you're on a stage as a comedian willing to talk about every issue that's on, like Chris Rock is talking about abortion and he's talking about, the royal family and he's talking about all sorts of things. And if you bought a ticket to that and you sat through a whole list of pop culture and political and newsworthy issues, and not one time did he mention getting slapped in the face by Will Smith, you'd be like, No.
It'd be like,
I want to hear it from you. I want
to
hear
it. It'd be like going to a
concert
and your favorite band is playing, but they don't play the number one song
that's right.
that made them who they were. Like if you went to Foo Fighters and you didn't hear Everlong.
Oh, yeah, right.
You'd
exactly.
be so disappointed. I mean, you know, every other concert they've ever done, they end their concert with Everlong, and you sat there and you're like, they didn't play it.
Yep. Yeah, because the other ones, the actors have shields. I mean, they're not public speakers. They're not selling themselves as a commentator on the. But you are. If you're a comedian, you are. That's your thing. So, yeah, when Will Smith says, I can't believe you can't let it go, he got slapped in the face in front of a billion people. You try that, idiot. Why don't you try getting slapped in the face in front of a billion people? Let it go. What are you talking about? What a humiliating moment. Yeah.
And we literally were left sitting there going, you know, I remember when we talked about it the next day, it's like, was that real?
Yeah.
Was exactly. it staged?
Yeah. It's like, Will Smith, because it's convenient for you that he forgets about it? Why? Yeah. Because Emancipation didn't do so well as you thought it was going to do?
You know, Tony, it would really help my brand.
Yeah, exactly.
If you just forgot about it.
Because everything you put out now is around you and slapping Chris Rock on stage, like because it would be more convenient if he didn't bring it up again. Like what a dumb thing to say. Will Smith should say, you know what? I did a horrible thing to that guy, and he should be able to talk about it as long as he wants. I gotta take it. I gotta eat it. I did it. I was stupid. I was influenced by the gaze my wife gave me.
Do you think he regrets slapping a comedian? Because if he had slapped, like, you know, to your credit, too, if he had slapped just an actor.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, you're 100% right. If
he had gone up and slapped, like, Michael B. Jordan.
Right.
First of all, I don't think he would because, you know, that would be Creed versus Ali. It would be great
Daniel Day-Lewis? Can he slap Daniel Day-Lewis and get away with it?
No, because Daniel Day-Lewis is a method actor.
Yeah,
and
he
would immediately revert into his Gangs of New York character.
Exactly. That's 100% right. Was he Billy the Butcher?
Billy the Butcher.
Billy the Butcher from Gangs of New York.
So let's go back to Jonah Hill. Yeah. If he slapped Jonah Hill, Jonah Hill's not really going to say anything about it. Uh-oh. He's not taking a stage. But you slap a comedian, that's for them, they're like, that's material.
That's material. I just got material. And not only material, I'm going to open up on a bunch of things that I'm going to talk about you and your wife that are going to be funny now because I have the scepter.
Yeah.
Before, oh man, I didn't want to touch that. You slapped me. Your whole family is an open book now. Your whole life is an open book.
Yeah.
Right? And Chris Rock bringing up how she cheated on him and he was interviewed by her or interviewed her or whatever it was.
Right.
Like, no problems throwing that out on the stage.
That was funny, by the way.
That was great.
If you haven't seen that clip, you got to check that out.
Great, great, great stuff. That was, you know what? As I'm getting older, I'm finding less and less laugh out loud funny. That's laugh out loud funny.
That was
a great time watching Chris Rock's special.
Because, you know, we know what made it funny? He wasn't telling a joke.
Right. Yeah.
He was just giving you the news in his way.
Right.
Like, in case you didn't know this, this is what happened. This is how I think about it. Just giving a simple analogy of your wife interviewing you about her infidelity.
I remember seeing Chris Rock when he was a kid and thinking he was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And he was like 18.
SNL.
You know, SNL on it. I thought he was hysterical. I thought he was fantastic.
And
I'm glad to see
that
he's still funny. As I've gotten older and I'm not a kid anymore and he's not a kid anymore and he's still hilarious.
See, I know it's always a great debate, but was that like the best era of Saturday Night Live?
Could be,
from like Mike Myers to, you know, Phil Hartman, Kevin Nealon, all the way through to, you know, Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, Farley, Spade. I mean, I think it's like some of the most successful members out of SNL, too.
One of the funniest things I ever heard Chris Rock say is something my wife and I always joke about. Is he says, you ever go out with a couple, a brand new couple? He goes, and then you sit there and you go, you're just looking at them and the way they react to each other. And you think, and you look at your wife and you go, oh, my God, he's actually listening to everything she has to say. And I say that to my wife all the time whenever we meet new people at church or something, like, oh, we've only been married 6 months. I go, oh, he actually is listening to her.
He actually cares.
He actually cares what she has to say. It's amazing.